When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Oh, he hit 239 with 8 home runs and 30 runs batted in. Well hit fly ball deep to right field. Forget it, it's going to go. There it goes. Home run.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Call his wife and hey, 405. McMonagle here with you on this Wednesday morning, July 3rd. As we get ready for the 4th of July, obviously tomorrow. The weather, I was told, looks nice. I didn't check myself, of course, but somebody told me. So we should have a nice week. And hopefully the New York Yankees can turn things around and hopefully the Mets stay hot. As the Mets score 5 runs in extra innings. The offense is unstoppable. Even when they get stopped in the first 9, don't give them an extra inning because they will make you pay for it. As back-to-back games in extra innings with just absolute monster innings, 6 the other night, 5 last night, 11 runs over the last 2 games. You're getting it from everywhere. Nimmo has to come into the game because of Bader getting hurt running into the wall. And you lost J.D. Martinez to a little bit of an ankle injury from wearing brand-new shoes. We'll see how long he's gone, but I mean, Nimmo comes in, gets the base, the game tying hit in the 8th with a base hit the other way. You're seeing that left and right. I mean, it's not just the home runs. Yeah, Alonso hits a big home run in this game. Lindor hits a home run, but it's just good at bats. It's Nimmo going the other way. He's already got 50 RBIs this year. I mean, he's on pace for close to 100. You know, right at the, pretty much at the halfway point. But he's going the other way for big hits. Iglesias goes the other way for big hits. Alvarez not only getting the, you know, big hits over the course of this stretch, but throwing runners out in big spots. Like, I mean, just the team is playing so well. And even Manaea pitches 7 innings and gives you an excellent game and goes deep into the game, and they figure out a way to come back and win. And that's really the feeling right now, is that this team is going to win. That's how I feel. And so the last thing I want to do, and I know it's still a talking point, and I myself have trouble looking at this Met team through any other prism other than what are they going to do at the deadline. And right now, if they do anything other than at the deadline than buy, they are fools. And I don't think David Stearns is a fool. I think he had a plan, but you have to deviate from that plan when you're presented with what you're presented with here, which is the best offense in the National League for a month with no signs of slowing down. And I know there's been some talk about, you know, Severino, certainly. Over the last weeks, there's been reports of the idea the Mets have enough in their starting rotation depth where they could still move a piece like Severino or Manaea or whomever they get the best package for, which absolutely makes no sense to me. But now we even got people suggesting that J.D. Martinez should be traded, the guy who started this whole thing. This team is too damn good to do anything other than to try and help it in the position it needs, which is obviously the bullpen. I'm not suggesting you throw caution to the wind and trade away all the prospects you got over the last 2 years. I don't think you have to go out there and get the most dynamic closer in the sport or go out there and get a middle-of-the-order lineup piece. Not like you don't have to go trade for Vladimir Guerrero or anything crazy, but you have to bolster this team. You have to go out there and add some pieces, and you shouldn't be paying Peter to, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul to do it. I like this team too much. They've done too much to show me the grittiness, the toughness, and this offense in particular, pounding, good pitching, you know, coming through late. You make a mistake like a ball the other night through Abrams' legs, they're going to make you pay. Like, you give them an inch, they take a foot on a nightly basis. I love that about this team. They play bully baseball, and right now I'm only focused about one thing, competing inside this National League, winning a wild card spot against the rest of this league that I don't have faith in. They've taken the first 2 games in this 8-game road trip against 2 teams that they are battling with in Washington and Pittsburgh, and right now they are playing themselves into being the best team of that secondary crop in the National League, and I'm helping them get better than that. And I'm not doing anything other than that. And, of course, the Yankees struggle. Luis Gil, another poor start. I don't think it's fatigue. I don't think it's that he's hit some wall. I think he's just struggling. I think sometimes we put our perceptions, and that's been such a talking point, that the minute he struggles, well, that's the reason. It's the innings. It's the fatigue. can't just be a young rookie trying to figure himself out and doesn't have the aptitude to make in-game adjustments or have the confidence in himself to figure it out on the fly or have an understanding of himself enough to figure it out on the fly. No, it's got to be all of our worst fears. And I understand that, and it's worth monitoring. And I'm concerned about this rotation, clearly, as now Rodon, who has shown you absolutely nothing over the last three starts and has his own inabilities of making in-game adjustments and pitching with any kind of pressure, is now yet again thrusted into a situation where they would lose the series to the Reds tonight if he doesn't pitch well. And he's got to be the next guy up in a rotation that is struggling mightily, as well as the offense and as well as the leadoff hitter Volpe. And I've told you I want to move Soto to leadoff, and as well as Verdugo, the cleanup hitter who can't be cleanup anymore, and as well as DJ LeMahieu, who has no pop in his bat whatsoever. So the Yankees have problems. The Mets are on fire. The New York Giants showed you last night in the first episode of Hard Knocks that Joe Shane is in charge, that the organization is extremely competent at the moment and well-run, at least, and healthy. Now, whether the decisions they make turn out to be good, whether Malik Nabers turns out to be good, whether or not trusting Daniel Jones after giving him that contract is the right decision or not remains to be seen. But I thought there was a lot of telling stuff from that first episode. I thought it was better than I thought it was going to be. I actually find it more interesting than a typical Hard Knock. So I'm looking forward to the rest of the series. I'm looking forward to seeing Daniel Jones and some of the things. Now, there won't be any practice time. We'll see how far it takes it, and see. We'll see some of the minicamp, I'm sure. But ultimately, finding out how Joe Shane thinks about things, how the operation works, I found it really fascinating. And I also found it pretty positive for me that he believes that the running back is devalued, because you got the sense he never wanted to bring back Saquon Barkley unless it was at a number he was very comfortable with. And maybe that's the one negative thing about him. In this, he kind of misread the market for Saquon Barkley and didn't think anybody would pay him what the Eagles paid him. But other than that, I thought he came out really sharp on top of things, has a lot of guys who are willing to tell him contrary opinions. He's not surrounded by yes men. The coach was able to hire his coaching staff. And ultimately, they paid Daniel Jones $40 million, and they're going to try and protect him, and they're going to try and get him weapons. And this is the year of Daniel Jones. Here we go again. Take six. So hope the second verse isn't the same as the first. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Let's get to the calls here on our final hour. Danny and Belrose. What's up, Danny?
Hey, good morning, Chris. How's it going?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. So, I'm liking the way Aaron Judge is playing. Obviously,
you think so? I wasn't so sure. Yeah, I was watching him last night, going, I mean, you're only hitting 320. It's only 32 home runs. I mean, geez, I was really a little. I was expecting more from Aaron Judge, to be honest with you.
I actually looked at this at all three categories. He's got a legitimate chance to win a triple crown.
He's leading the triple crown. He's leading the league in hitting. He's leading the league in home runs and RBIs. He's an absolute beast. And the question is, it's not even so much the home run that he was allowed to hit. The question is, I don't know how any team allows him to get three hits. He had three hits last night. How in the world do you give Aaron Judge three at-bats to see pitches in the strike zone? It boggles my mind. And we keep saying it's going to change, but it doesn't seem to be. I don't know when these teams are going to come to their senses.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what? I get tired of I know they're looking at him like a Barry Bonds. They always walk this guy, but you know what? You know what? Why walk him and make his off base tire and also like it's like go after the guy, you know, stop being a baby and pitch this guy, you know.
Well,
that's what I look at.
We look at it differently, and I'm sorry, there's some echo every time you talk, buddy. I'm going to let you go. Call me back, Danny. What do the other teams care about his on-base percentage? Did you just say that? Like, I didn't want to harp on you or yell at you, but why would you want to help his on-base percentage? Is that what you said? Like, other teams should be concerned, oh, I don't want to pump up his on-base percentage. They only care about giving up runs, Danny. And the reason why you walk him is because whoever's hitting behind him, namely Verdugo and Glaber, who's, I guess, you know, did get a big at-bat in this game and drove in a couple runs, but like, because Everybody else stinks, Danny. Because every time he takes a swing, he hits it hard. Even the out, he just got under a fly ball and hit it right to the warning track. Like, he just missed his second. He was this close to two home runs last night. Why in the world would you let him beat you when there's nobody else? Because you're afraid, hey, his on-base percentage is going to go up? Who cares? Who cares? He's winning the Triple Crown or leading in the Triple Crown right now. That's why you're welcome. Chuck in the truck.
McNarnacle, how are you?
I'm doing well, Chuck in the truck. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right. Just wanted to touch on some of the stuff of, you know, the first episode of the Hard Knocks.
What'd you think of it?
It was okay. It actually gave me insight into, the intricacies and behind the scenes of, like, what the managers.
I actually found it more fascinating than the typical Hard Knocks. I thought it was actually, it doesn't have all the secondary stories of this player and his trials and tribulations and some of the stuff they give you, or it didn't give you any football and stuff. Like, you didn't see anybody making plays in practice or battling for positions, right. But I mean, just as far as a Giant fan, and I said this, I don't know if this were the Cleveland Browns, I don't know how much I'd be interested in it. But the fact that it's my team, and you get to see how their decision making works, and I found it extremely fascinating.
Yes, yes. And what aggravated me though, and it's going on in the NFL, Elias, is like the devaluation of the running back position. Yeah. I see it as the smart GMs are not doing that. Like, even if you think about the teams that represented the NFC and the NFC Championship, one had just taken a running back in the top 10, and one just gave Christian McCaffrey all that money, the team that actually went on to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. So, in my opinion, the smart GMs are not doing that. And Howie Roseman is one of the best in the business, and he snapped up Saquon Barkley quickly. And what I didn't like is how Shane kept touching on, Jones making 40-something million as if he wasn't the one that gave him the contract. And what was really disturbing.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think he gave it in the tone of, he's making 40 million. It's killing us. He was saying, we've seen a good player. The facts are he's injured, but we believe in him. I gave him $40 million. And I have to trust him to be the offensive leader. Like, the questions were, well, what's our identity if we lose Saquon Barkley? And his point is the identity is the $40 million quarterback, which he's 100% right. That has to be the identity of the team. Has to be.
It does, but not when it's that guy. Like, this is what bothered me. Like, when Mara came in and Mara was saying that, and he was like, oh, well, we gave Jones the $40 million. This is the fork in the road. We need to see if this is our guy. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
See, that's the problem right there. There's no way that I'm giving this guy $40 million, and I'm still trying to find out if he's that guy.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
That's where you're wrong at.
But my point is we knew that. Like, we knew that heading in. I don't know what you expect. Like, we knew that they paid him the money, and we knew that, considering the injuries, that there's no way to feel that confident about it. And we also knew because they went out and looked at so many of the rookie quarterbacks and put so much work. And apparently, if you believe the reports like I do, they tried very hard to move up and draft someone at the quarterback position. Like, but I mean, we can revisit whether or not that's a good contract from a couple years ago, but I do believe once you've gone that course, there's nothing else to do but to trust them. Like, you can't gave them the $40 million. You have to trust them. Ultimately, the signing is going to be good or bad. I agree, but.
But at what expense? Like, we could have evaluated him just by picking up his fifth-year option. You could have evaluated him for half of the money.
Yeah.
The NFL, think of this point, the NFL literally put rules into place to prevent this. Like, if you remember, after Sam Bradford got all that money from the Rams coming out of school,
he was the last one.
A total bust.
Yeah.
They realigned the rookie scales because they didn't want teams to be saddled with all this money for a player that they're still evaluating.
Right.
So how do you go outside of that and then put yourself into a situation in which the NFL has literally put rules in a place to prevent, and it costs you?
Well, not because, only Saquon Barkley, but it cost you Xavier McKinney.
Well,
and you lost two of your best players, you know, so...
Yeah. Here's the thing. I mean, but it's revisionist history in some way, because I don't remember anybody. When they first took over as the GM and coach of the New York Giants, they had to make the decision right away. You have to make the decision heading into the fourth season on the fifth-year option. You don't get to play out that fourth year and then make the decision. You have to do it heading into the fourth year. So they've never coached him. Let me just finish.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Sorry. They had never seen him for themselves. They had never coached him. They had never worked with him. How could they possibly give him the money of a fifth-year option? Nobody was clamoring for them to give him a fifth-year option. It would have been the evaluation was that year they won 9 games and he won a playoff game. So therefore, you have to pay him or get rid of him. Like, I think it's revisionist history now to go back and say you should have given him the fifth-year option. Nobody wanted to give him the fifth-year option.
I mean, let's say if they were taking over in Kansas City, would you have to ask yourself if you were picking up Patrick Mahomes' fifth-year option?
No, he's not Patrick Mahomes.
Clearly, if
you were
taking over for the Chargers, right? If you were, so what I'm saying is, if he was good enough, whether they were there or not, you would have known that we're picking up his fifth-year option. And being that they didn't know and they needed to evaluate him, wouldn't it have been better to have a year of evaluation at $22 million than instead of at $41 million? Because that's essentially all you did.
No, but they had
kept him around for the.
You're missing the point that they had the year of evaluation, and he won. And then he went on the road and won a road playoff game, so they paid him. Like, that's the evaluation now. It's last year was not an evaluation year. Last year was, hey, we got Daniel Jones coming off a playoff win. We got Saquon Barkley. We won 9 games last year. We're going to take this and run with it and be better and be a playoff team again. Now he's blown out his knee. Now the neck issue popped up again. So now there's a new reevaluation of him. The new Daniel Jones coming off of a blown out ACL evaluation. Last year was not an evaluation for Daniel Jones. Last year was Daniel Jones answered the question, got the contract, away we go. But he was bad, blew out his knee, and so now with one more year on the contract that you can get out of after this year, now there's a new evaluation of Daniel Jones. Now, your overall point of being sick and tired of evaluation years for Daniel Jones, bingo, right there with you. Makes me sick to my stomach. But it's hard for me to blame Joe Shane for it. He didn't draft him. He wasn't there for the first 3 years of him. How could you walk in to a situation where this team is so bad that they needed you, that they've been a disaster and one of the most losing franchises in the sport with this quarterback for 3 years, and now he's supposed to come in and automatically just grant them a fifth year? What if Daniel Jones, during the fourth-year evaluation, proved he wasn't worth it? Then you got rid of him a year early and saved yourself $20 million. Like, it's not fair to look at it that way now. I get your point. The way it worked out, you instead of giving him the contract and then having him injured, sure, I would have rather have been a fifth-year option and I'd be done with him. But that's not how it worked out. And it's unfair to go back and say that's what they should have done. But it doesn't change the fact that the tough spot they're in, the bad contract it looks like right now, and the evaluation of Daniel Jones yet again is sickening. Because I agree with you. He's not Patrick Mahomes, no matter how much the GM will try and tell you even Patrick Mahomes wouldn't win with this offense. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not one of these quarterbacks. And typically by this year, if you don't know, then the answer is no. That's how I view it. That's how I feel about it. That's why I'm confident the answer will be no. Because if you don't know by now, the answer is no. But they were unable to move up. They won too many games at the end of the year to draft a quarterback. Congratulations. I hope all you Giant fans were very happy as they were beating New England and beating Philadelphia at the end of the year. Hope all those wins were very fruitful for you, because it led to this situation they're in with Daniel Jones. So we'll see. But it's not fair to look back now and say, why'd you give him that contract? Why did you not give him the fifth-year option? Like, that's just revisionist history, and it's not fair. One more quick Daniel Jones call. John in Brooklyn. What's up, John?
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Good, John. How are you?
First time I think I spoke to you on the overnight. But anyway, I have no credibility whatsoever because I'm a Jets fan. But I think your take on Daniel Jones is pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm.
The 6-time is the sixth time going to be the charm or not?
Yeah, exactly. The only time the sixth time was the charm was with my cousin Vinny when he passed the bar for the sixth time. That was the sixth. That was the sixth time was the lucky charm. Anywhere else, I've never heard.
I can't even talk.
Yeah, I've never heard of the sixth time being the lucky charm outside of my cousin Vinny and Joe Pesci. So
I'm going to remember that. Thanks, yeah. Chris.
No, you got it. I give you one to tell your friends at the social club. But yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not saying Daniel Jones stinks. All right, no, I don't think they're just like I want to see how he performs. I'm concerned about him. The injury stuff, like he said it a bunch of times. Joe Shane said it in the show. It's a fact. It's a fact. It's a fact. He said it like three or four times. Facts. He's blown out his knee, and he's got a neck injury. And in the last 2 years, he had three debilitating injuries. That is a fact. And it's hard to move forward and feel that confident about it. But can he throw the football on some level? Absolutely. Are we seeing already teammates? Right. Singletary came out and said his accuracy, his touch, that's why they called him Danny Dimes. On some level, is he talented? Of course. He's an NFL quarterback. And I firmly believe him to be that. I mean, I think he's a starting quarterback in the league. And even given the right circumstance, he could be, you know, he could win some games. But the Giants don't have those circumstances, and it's been too long, and I don't think he's worth the money, and he's too injury-prone to trust. But I hope I'm wrong. I hope he's healthy. I hope he's great. I hope they trust him. And Malik Nabers makes an enormous difference, and they bolster the offensive line, and there's some continuity there, and they stay healthy there. And Daniel Jones throws a bunch of touchdown passes, and they win a bunch of games. Of course, that's what I'm rooting for. I just don't see it. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. 426 on the fan. Another half hour to the warm-up show. We'll continue to take your phone calls till then, though. Yankees, Mets, Giants, Hard Knocks. Topics for the last half hour right here on the fan.
When this happened, you talked about it on the fan.
Full windup by Simmons. And it's still going to be high in the air. Deep to center field. Way back. It may go. Oh, a grand slam. A grand slam. Mike Piazza.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
McMonagle here with you. 888-808-1019.
He wakes up in the morning.
Nothing but these, like,
no.
Whiny.
This is not the same.
No, it's not the same.
No, this is different.
But it's still that kind of like, and the week begins. He says, he looks at each other. Why not? What's next? Hootie and the Blowfish? Pearl Jam? Like, it's all these bands with these twinge to their voice. It's all right. Just happens to be your thing, I guess. All right, let's get back to the calls as we're talking about the Yankee lineup. I was just talking out in the newsroom with Lopresti and Rascona about the Yankee lineup. And yes, I'm ready to put Ben Rice at the cleanup position. And it's not any sort of, wow, Ben Rice has really just floored me with his performance and his power, which he, you know, he's yet to hit a home run, but he's at least, he looks like a live bat. They don't have any other options right now. I would put Gleyber Torres there against lefties, and I would put Ben Rice there against righties. I don't know what else to do. And I've always liked Volpe at the towards the back end of the lineup. I like Volpe 6th and 7th because I feel like I can use his, if he ever gets on base, which has been the problem, right? If he doesn't get on base, it doesn't matter where he hits, clearly. But if he ever turns it around with a little bit less pressure in, say, the 6th or 7th slot, now I got a guy who can run and steal bases. And I'm not worried about getting thrown out in front of, you know, Soto and Judge and feel like I'm killing rallies as opposed to, all right, if I get thrown out in front of Trevino, it didn't really matter. I wasn't expecting much. But if I ever steal a base, now I can bunt the guy. Now I can do things. Now I can play hit and run. I can do things I wouldn't do at the top of the lineup with Volpe. So I like moving Volpe to like 6th or 7th to try and manufacture runs at the bottom of the lineup because we've seen it. You know, Grisham's laying down punts. Like there's no pop there. There's no real hitters there. Like especially like right now before the trade deadline at least, like I like the idea of having Volpe down there trying to manufacture runs. And I love the idea of having that two slot be trying to get someone going. Because if you can't hit there, if Verdugo can't get, you know, hit some fastballs with Soto on first and Judge behind him, then forget it. Liam in Blue Point. What's up, Liam?
Hey, Chris. How are you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Doing pretty good. I had to agree with you with the whole lineup situation. Something's definitely got to change. And I think LeMahieu's definitely got to be taken out for sure.
Maybe
convert back in.
I've been hesitant to do that because, like, last night was the first night where I'm really starting to agree with you. Because, like I said, I've been waiting for LeMahieu to turn it around because I still believe if LeMahieu turns it around, you have a real difference maker. I don't know, although he did have an impact at the beginning of the year, I have to be fair. I don't know if Oswaldo Cabrera is a real difference maker, even when he's going. Like, I just don't know if he is. Is he better than the bad DJ LeMahieu right now? Sure, I don't think there's an argument. He's a switch hitter. He's shown a little bit more life than LeMahieu has. And so in the moment, which eventually will be all that matters if they continue losing, in the moment you could make a strong case that playing Oswaldo Cabrera is a no-brainer and absolutely should be done. But if I'm looking to help this offense overall, getting DJ LeMahieu going is more impactful than getting Oswaldo Cabrera going. We've seen DJ LeMahieu finish third in an MVP, win batting titles in both leagues. And while it might be a pipe dream to hope that guy comes back, last year he had an 800 OPS in the second half. I still think as of yesterday, I still thought he could be a difference maker if you could ever get him going. So I'm willing to play him because he doesn't hurt you defensively, and I'm looking to get him going and make a difference with this lineup as opposed to just having a slightly better hitter in there who ultimately, no matter how good he gets, won't be as good as I can get out of DJ LeMahieu. But last night was the first night where I thought, man, he got off an A-swing, or it looked like to be an A-swing to me. It looked like that's as good a swing as he's had in a week on a high mistake breaking ball, and it didn't go anywhere. Like, it's just like he's zapped of power. These foot injuries have just zapped him of any kind of real pop off the bat, any kind of oomph. He's got no oomph. He's oomphless. He is absolutely oomphless. And we've got... Like, so, yeah, now maybe, you know what, play Cabrera. When Birdie comes back, play Birdie. And that might be an answer to your top of the order hitter. He might be your leadoff hitter. Like, that's where we're at until the trade deadline. But having said all that, they've scored some runs here and there. Like, they scored 7 in a loss against the Mets. They scored 16 and what was it, 7 or 9 in the 2 games against Toronto. They didn't get shut out last night. They scored 4 runs. The starting pitching has been the main issue, and they got to get that fixed. Ryan in Rockland. What's up, Ryan?
All right, Chris. And I guess we're in drive time now. But the thing about...
You could argue that. If you're driving, it's drive time. That's how it works.
Yeah, no, the city, it gets busy now. This is when it really starts to pick up, you know. Mm-hmm. And the thing with Volpe, when he gets on first base and Soto is up, they don't want him to steal that because they want that big hole for the left-handed batter. I mean, it's always been a thing in baseball.
No question. Volpe, and also the idea of getting thrown out with Soto and Judge coming up is, you know, you can't do it. You want to get as many runs as you can. Running into outs with those two guys coming up seems silly. I've been saying it for months. That it zaps his. I remember I did, before the season started, I did the Rico Bronya with Evan Roberts, and he wanted to make like a stolen base bet for Volpe, and I said no, because I think they might hit him leadoff eventually, and that will kill the stolen bases. I said it before the season started, because it makes no sense to run in front of the two of them. So that's why I don't mind him hitting 6th or 7th. I don't want to hit him 9th. I want to hit him 6th or 7th so he can get on base and try and manufacture runs at the bottom of the lineup and have a more well-rounded kind of lineup where you can get runs top to bottom. But if he's going to have a 600 OPS and a 310 on base percentage, doesn't really matter where he hits.
Right. The thing is, Volpe has like 60 runs scored. So he is scoring runs. He's not getting on as much as we would like him to do it.
No.
But it's the bottom of the order that is a total horror show that's really not hitting. At the beginning of the year, I singled out the Yankees starting pitching. I really was not impressed with it.
Right.
A lot of people are putting names up there. But let's see how this season plays out as we get into September, because this is going to be a different looking team in September. Trading deadline comes up. Cashman's going to be a player. Let's see who he can pick up. But the bottom half of that lineup has got to be dealt with. And if you can bring in another starter, let's see who's looking to give away. A lot of teams are going to be involved in the playoffs, we know, because of the extra playoff teams. That's right. A given. But as far as a team going into a slump, yes, teams do go into slumps. But usually the better players and the better teams will come out of it and come out of it on fire. There's a big question mark with this team. But let me just say something about Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones is the gingerbread man. He gets injured too much. And this is now the third year of Shane and the bold one. As far as I'm concerned, they're going to be evaluated now because they've been there long enough. I don't want to hear who was there for the draft.
No doubt.
They could have franchised Daniel Jones if they weren't that sure about him and had given him that 1 year. If they didn't like him, too many injuries, and get rid of him. Now, I'm just hoping, can I just say one last thing?
Yeah.
Tommy DeVito impressed me. I hope he did his workouts during the year, didn't get full of himself, and really got, because this kid has presence in that pocket. We know the Giant offensive line is horrible, but a lot of people don't understand that. But they're fans of the game. You're an old offensive lineman. You know what can happen to a quarterback if there's no blocking. But Tommy DeVito, I like him. I hope he did his workouts.
Yeah, well, let me just answer a couple of things. One, the last one. Tommy DeVito had no quarterback, had no pocket presence. The biggest issue with Tommy DeVito is he took terrible sacks. I understand the offensive line gave up more sacks than you know, this team since, I don't know, however many years. It was this high sack total. Tommy DeVito ran into 10. And Daniel Jones doesn't help him either. I mean, Daniel Jones, the real one you point to is the game against Seattle. There's a linebacker lined up right off the edge, clear as day, staring him right in the face. And he turns his back to him and lets himself get absolutely wrecked. Daniel Jones has done his offensive line no favors. Now, the offensive line isn't good, don't get me wrong. And the offensive line has done him no favors. But he could get hit a hell of a lot less than he does. He doesn't have the wherewithal to get rid of the ball in time. He doesn't have it. Other quarterbacks would not be sacked as much as Daniel Jones. That's just a fact. Doesn't mean the offensive line's good or that other quarterbacks would win Super Bowls with them. I get it. But they wouldn't get sacked nearly as much as Daniel Jones does or Tommy DeVito. Neither of them have great pocket presence. And the reason they won the first year that they won with Daniel Jones is Dable told him, I can't stand you turning the ball over. Look for your first read. If it's not there, tuck it and run. That's how Daniel Jones played. I'll look for my one guy, considering there's really not another wide receiver in the group. Didn't seem that unreasonable. I'll look for my one route. If it's not there, I'll tuck it and run. That and a defense that played better than you thought and Saquon Barkley's ability got them to the playoffs. And then the offense did sort of hit a stride at the end of the year, had a great game against the Colts. Scored 30 points for the first time in more than a calendar year, more than almost two calendar years, and then played a great game against Minnesota. 100%. He was brilliant in that game. But, and I don't know, the gingerbread man, I never heard that expression from someone who gets hurt all the time. I guess any sort of cookie is crumbly. That's how the cookie crumbles. He also is fast. You know, you can't catch me. He's the gingerbread man. I guess it works on several. But I don't know how fast he is now. I don't know if the gingerbread man ever had ACL surgery. I don't know.
What's funny is it sounded like Shane also was taking, we put Daniel in bad situations.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yes and no. Like you just said, Daniel also puts himself in bad situations.
No doubt. But I don't think there's another option. I certainly don't think, you know, Tommy DeVito is the answer.
And that sauce isn't that good.
And the Rao's pizza sauce is not that good. 888-808-1019. Quick break. And then the biggest Daniel Jones defender I know, Brett in Long Island. He'll join us next, right here on The Fan.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
21 of the last 22 times they've scored. Here's Sims to throw on third down. Up the middle, touchdown, Bavaro. Mark Bavaro goes to one knee. Genuflex in prayer as a 13-yard throw over the middle answers the prayer for the Giants fan.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Yeah, that's a good promo. Little Mark Bavaro. Love it. I still say I don't know why Mark Bavaro is number 89, but that is Mark Bavaro, those throwback jerseys, the 89 all blue 1980 throwback uniform. 80s throwback uniform is the sexiest football jersey ever. I love it. I don't know what it is about Bavaro, but it's that it's got to be Bavaro. The uniform overall is tremendous, and it sucks that they're bringing out these 100-year hideous uniforms. I don't know why they're doing it. I mean, I guess the point of it is to look hideous and be jarring and say, oh, this is what it was 100 years ago, but man, oh man. When you have such beautiful classic throwbacks, the all white, the all blue too is especially the Bavaro one. Sweet. Now they're giving you this red striped nonsense with these beige pants. It's ridiculous. All right, but here we go. Let's see if Brett watched the first episode, how he feels about the first episode. I knew it was coming because I knew they were gonna kiss his ass in the first episode. So let's see what we have here. Brett in Long Island. What's up, Brett?
Quick, before I get to the most important thing, Daniel Jones, you talk about the Yankees lineup at nauseam. I just want to say that's
Thank
the
you.
Most overrated thing I've ever heard of. A lineup is only important the first inning of a game. That's it.
Well,
because then after that, it doesn't matter. Like, and okay, let's put this guy first, second, third, fourth. Mm-hmm. But guys are slumping, 1 out of 20. So I never got, the lineup, yeah. Let's change this. Especially when only two guys are hitting. But that's
No, listen, I agree with you. I think lineup construction is overblown, and I hardly ever talk about it. This is the one time I have. So, yeah, I've made a point of it maybe the last 2 days because I really want to change it because of the struggles right now, and I like the idea of Soto and Judge 1 and 3. But overall, I've argued countless times with many Yankee fans who get so hung up on lineup construction. So, I agree with you.
All right, so back to number 8.
Yes.
I'm going to put this argument to bed.
Sure,
you
please
said
put
you
it to bed.
Keep using this argument about DeVito and Tyra Taylor, how they came in and, okay, once they figured out DeVito, he was done. He'll never play again. He'll mm-hmm. never start anywhere. You'll see that. That's done.
Okay.
And Tyrod Taylor single-handedly lost the Bills game. I know you watch every game. He lost that game on the goal line. He admitted that.
Yeah, he made a bad decision.
Against the Rams, he lost that game. He had a shuffle pass. Right, to win that game, to Saquon Barkley on a 2-point conversion,
yep.
that he literally couldn't throw a 2-foot pass.
That is correct.
And it went a foot. That was Daniel Jones on either one of those. He'd be crucified. So let's put those. And they also don't have film on these guys right away. You're changing
them. They didn't have film on Tyrod Taylor. And when Tyrod Taylor came in, you're 100% right. You're 100% right. Yeah. He made a mental gaffe at the end of the half in that game and then couldn't throw an easy pass to the shuffle pass. You're right, 100%. He also came in and made it like, you know, Hyatt was on the team prior to. I was unaware that Hyatt was even on the team. I was unaware that wide receivers even played, and yet he was able to throw the ball down the field and make plays to Slayton and make plays to Hyatt, where Daniel Jones did nothing but stand there and get tackled. So you could say whatever you want about certain plays, you're 100% right. If that Bills game had went the way of the other games with Daniel Jones, the Giants aren't in a position to win that game.
Do you know the argument back to that? And I agree, he had some really good back shoulder deep passes. I'm not going to deny it on the sideline.
Yeah.
But when you hang this phone up, you look it up when you get a chance, because I was shocked. Daniel Jones, I think it was 2 seasons ago, led the NFL. I was shocked about it, with the longest pass completions in the NFL of 30 yards and over. So think about that one. Second thing, Chris, quick. Where are you at with Daboll right now after 2 seasons, and where are you at with Joe Shane? And then let me follow that point. Where are you at right now before this season starts?
Yeah.
What's your mindset with those two guys? I want to hold you to this. What do you got?
Yeah, hold me to it, because God forbid I break my word against the great Brett in Long Island.
Just what's in your head?
Yeah, I'm gonna. Okay. I have faith in both of them. I like that Brian Daboll has the power he has. I like the idea now that he's taking over the play calling. I think it's important. I think we forget that's how he got his job here, play calling and developing quarterbacks. So, I mean, I think they're kind of on the hot seat. I think that he has a problem delegating responsibility. That's why I'm kind of glad he's taken it and eliminating that sort of issue that he's had. But ultimately, I think he's a good coach. I think he's a good offensive coach. I think Joe Shane has done a decent job, but both are subject to
being on the hot seat here. There's no doubt about it. So, I mean, I don't feel really great about them, but I like them. I'm kind of lukewarm on them.
That's another part of what we're doing here, then, because I want to make sure. Because you're so down, you know, or skeptical on Daniel Jones, all right? I could tell you think he's done. So if he's done, then they will. You could argue he's done this year. Like if he's terrible,
I think there is
a strong argument that Dable was here.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be the quarterback whisperer.
Yeah.
Right? And all you do is talk about how bad Daniel Jones is. There's no adjustments. You're bringing up Seattle, this basic stuff.
Oh, terrible.
So you bring it up. He's not throwing, you know, the deep ball. So do you agree with that, then? So if Daniel Jones is a total bust, then are you saying Dable should be fired and Shane should be fired? And have a great day, Chris.
Yeah, you got it, bud. Depending on how it looks and it's not injury-based, yeah, I think that's a fair thing. Now, look, he did get the best season out of Daniel Jones, and I give him credit for that. And ultimately, he wasn't given his guy. I mean, I don't have that much faith in Daniel Jones. That's the whole point of this. I mean, yeah, I know he's the quarterback whisperer, but he can't make Daniel Jones significantly better than he is. That's why I wanted to draft the young quarterback, because I want Brian Dable to do what he does and develop young quarterbacks, not take a quarterback that's already been here for 3 years who might have developed bad habits with a previous regime and the two previous regimes. Totally fair. But I wanted him to have his guy that he believed in, that he saw something in college he deemed worthy, and to get him from the ground up. That's what I wanted. Ultimately, no matter how Daniel Jones performs here, on some level, it will be at the problem of the head coach. But ultimately, I don't think that highly of Daniel Jones. So I don't know where to put it. But yeah, I don't disagree. On some level, if Daniel Jones never gets it together and can't perform and can't make the offense function and is terrible, I suppose, yeah. If they lose, I think Dable's job is up for grabs. I don't think they have to fire him. I don't think they absolutely will fire him, but they could. I think his seat is, you know, somewhat hot right now, and you have to have a decent season. This is year three. This is year three, and year one can't be your best year after 3 years. Like, that's the thing. Sometimes those first years are killers because you can't get worse. You can't come to a situation, have a good first year, and then get worse and worse. Because now there's a trend in the wrong direction. You'd rather come here, be terrible, and get better, obviously. So I have to go back and check that. 2 year, what he led the NFL in completions over 30 yards?
I think he was 14th in the NFL in that stat in 2022.
So right now he's 14th in 20. That would shock me. Is there a chance his percentage, because they hardly threw 30 yards down the field, that maybe he led the league in percentage of completions 30 yards down the field or more, because he hardly threw it and he might have completed 4 out of 7 or something because they don't throw it? But I have no idea. I would be very surprised because they don't go down the field. They don't go down the field.
He only had 27 completions of 20 yards or more.
Right. Yeah, so that sounds fugazi to me.
And Mahomes had like 70-something.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I as soon as he said it, it didn't make any sense. But who am I to quote? Who am I to question the great Brett in Long Island, who's going to hold this stuff? I better make sure. Let me just make sure I know exactly what I'm saying, because Brett is going to hold me accountable. So I got to make sure I know exactly what I meant when I said it. I know what I said. I said it. And I don't think Daniel Jones is a terrible player. I just don't think he's very good. I don't think he's good enough to warrant the contract and not trying to get a young, talented quarterback for this group moving forward when Daniel Jones is already at the end of his, like, how many years can we try Daniel Jones? And that's what I don't get about the Daniel Jones defenders. Because on one breath, especially Brett and guys like Brett, will say, well, when he has a good year this year, will you be willing to say you were wrong? Will you be willing to say you were wrong? Well, how many years does he have to have bad years before you will say you're wrong? Like, it's like if Daniel Jones plays 5 good games in a row, suddenly, ha-ha, I told you. But when he's miserable for 5 years, it's like, just wait. Just wait. It's the offensive line. They don't have this. They don't have that. They don't have this. They don't have that. It's always an excuse for him. Even if the excuses are valid, eventually you have to either, if you're either good enough to overcome or you're not. That's it. And I just, how many more years can you go into the year with, this is the year of Daniel Jones, we'll finally find out. We have said that there have been more finally we'll find out Daniel Jones years than there are finally Grateful Dead tours.
Like, it's just like every other year, this is the last one. This is the last one. We'll, you know, the last time the Dead are touring, and then this is the last time we'll know if Daniel Jones is the guy or not. We've had six of these. I can't take it anymore. I can't go into another season with here we are to figure out who Daniel Jones is. Eventually, we figured it out. It didn't take a rocket scientist. Everybody have a wonderful 4th of July. I am going to go hide away for a while. I wish you all a very fond farewell, and I'll catch you on Monday. Have a great week. Have a great weekend. Thank you very much to Rami. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. I'll catch you guys again on Monday. Have a great 4th of July. Have a great weekend. Let's go, Yankees. Let's go, Mets. Enjoy the fireworks. Enjoy the hot dogs. I'm going to be at the ballpark tomorrow for firework night and see the Yankees. And Carlos Rodon shut down the Cincinnati Reds. That's right. That's it for me. The warm-up show is next. It will be with Michael Fliegelman and Chris Lopresti. Enjoy. I'll catch you later. Happy 4th.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.